hear it all the time. Tourism is big business for Wisconsin, and especially for West Central Northwestern Wisconsin. How big of an impact does tourism have, you ask? How about $18 billion statewide, and nearly $2 billion in counties in West Central and Northwestern Wisconsin alone? This hour, we'll talk with tourism experts from Western and Northwestern Wisconsin to digest those tourism spending figures and tell us about some of the new tourist attractions that are bringing people from the Midwest to the Badger State. This hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and as I said, I'm joined by a trio of experts in the tourism world. First, I'd like to introduce Linda John. She is the Executive Director for Visit Eau Claire. Linda John, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you.
Thanks.
And next, from the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, he's a regional tourism specialist. Drew Nussbaum joins us in studio as well.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having you. Thanks for coming. And also, James Bolin. He's the Executive Director for the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. He's also on the Governor's Council on Tourism. James Bolin, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. All right, folks. So last month, Governor Walker and the Department of Tourism, I mean, they might as well have shouted it from the hilltops that there was a $1 billion increase in tourism activity in 2014 compared to the year before. So what kind of activity are we talking about? Drew Nussbaum.
Well, if you look at the classic definition of tourism, it's people coming into the state that are going to stay somewhere. While they're here, they're going to go see something, do something. They're going to stay here, go out, have a meal. That, in a sense, is classic tourism. You do see some trends that are definitely changing, though, in that tourism model, because when they come here, it's how long are they going to be here? What are they going to do extra while they're here? So then you get into the secondary spending, you know, while you're here with a family. Will you need to go to the store and get some supplies? Will you need to not only get fuel for your car, now you need to get fuel for your ATVs? So it really is somewhat of a changing model, and it used to be kind of a one-size-fits-all. You know, you're promoted to people coming to Wisconsin. Well, now you have the millennial crowd, you have the younger generation, you have the Gen X, multicultural. There's so many different changes that are in tourism right now, and you really have to kind of be on top of all of them if you want to capitalize on it.
And as far as the dollar amounts that we're talking about, there's terms like total business sales, direct visitor spending. What's the difference?
The total business sales is when I was talking about the extra money that's spent. When someone comes here, let's say they spend 3-4 days here, and while they're here, not only do they stay in a hotel and go out for dinner and take in a show, go to a museum, but while they're here, then they also go and do some shopping, and they need to get extra things for the cabin. While they're here, they go to the farmer's market, pick up some items there. All of that extra spending goes into the total sales. So when you step away from what is, quote-unquote classic tourism, and then you start adding in all that extra expense, the longer that you can keep folks here and the more things that you can connect to tourism that in the past maybe were not considered classic tourism, like, agritourism, once I mentioned the farmers markets, those are always promoted as just something local. You came into town to pick up a couple of items for the night. Now that can be part of your tourism model.
Okay. I want to let our listeners know that the number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about tourism in Western and Northwestern Wisconsin, a big jump in spending 2014 compared to the year before. 800-228-5615. I'd be interested just to hear what people do for their time off, what kind of tourism they do. Are they staying closer to home because of economic situations? Are they just, have they got the cabin they've been going to for the past 20 years? 800-228-5615. More locally in Western and West Central Wisconsin, Northwestern Wisconsin too, we had our intern Simone Foster crunch some numbers, and tourism activity increased in counties in pretty much the Western Northwestern part of the state by $94 million. Some of the biggest increases percentage-wise could be found in Barron, Eau Claire, Jackson, and Rusk, and Trempealeau counties. Linda John, any idea why?
Well, there's a lot going on here, and people are wanting to find out about this area more and more. Eau Claire County specific was up just under 10%. That also tracked with our room tax collections for the year. Mm-hmm. So we know that that's pure tourism. Those are real dollars that are coming into our community. And we're identifying several things that have contributed to our growth. Festivals and events are just continue to be a mainstay for us, especially in the summer. It really is hard to find a summer weekend where there's not mm-hmm. at least one, if not several, going on. But those are starting to sort of expand out onto the shoulder seasons as well, into the fall months of September and October, which is great, to the point where we can extend that visitor, that prime visitor season is great. Sports is also huge, and sometimes they connect. There's a festival and a sporting event. There's so many different fun runs and charity runs and that type of thing, so that's a big part of it. And then the outdoors. I mean, it's generic, but we really have become known for our recreational assets. Outside Magazine just ran a national competition, and Eau Claire won first place for the Midwest as far as an outdoor destination.
Yeah, I remember. Twitter was just going
bananas. It was going crazy. We wanted to get number one in the nation, but we were able to hook number one in the Midwest, and we were really happy about that. And then I think the other piece of it is there's a lot going on in the music scene here, mm-hmm. and that's growing.
Definitely,
as well.
I want to break that down kind of bit by bit in a bit here, but that's good writing right there, James Boland. What about farther up north? I mean, what kind of things? I mean, we think of cable area. You know, you're going to fish for some muskies. You're going to stay in the woods. You might go cross-country skiing in the winter. But what do you think accounts for these numbers? What's driving these numbers? Are people getting a little more disposable income?
Well, you know, I think it's a combination of that. We saw, you know, the spending once they got here was up significantly. And so it wasn't just what they were spending on their hotel rooms when they got here. But once they were here, they were spending money, you know, in restaurants and shopping and different things. Up in our area, you know, the ice cave phenomenon had a huge impact on these numbers.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that did a lot of the driving, and not just in Bayfield County, but actually Ashland County and Douglas County, because a lot of the people stayed in hotels in both of those counties. And so you actually saw all three counties significantly impacted just by, you know, the strength of the ice caves.
Let's talk about the ice caves. I mean, I went 2013-2014, that bastard of a winter, if you forgive my language, but it created these super fine structures within the caves that hadn't been, I mean, there was like such pent-up demand, and then once they finally opened, what was it, a couple hundred thousand people they figured?
Yeah, in the matter of a few weeks from all over the world.
Right, yeah, and then this past winter was a little bit of a disappointment. I mean,
it was a lot shorter. You know, they were open for just a few weeks. But yeah, you know, the one thing about things like the ice caves is they're so weather dependent.
Yeah.
And if the ice doesn't form properly on the lake or stay properly on the lake, the caves don't open. So when they do, as you mentioned, that pent up, you know, excitement and pressure just goes bonkers. And so we see just a huge increase in visitors from all over, and they're in the restaurants and everywhere else too. So it's really good.
And I want to, social media, what kind of an impact do you think that had on it? And I want to go to Drew Nussbaum for the ice caves.
It was incredible. I mean, you saw everyone was going and posting their photos, and everyone else would see them, and they're like, we got to go see that. And so it just drove the phenomenon in a way we haven't seen in the north before.
And Drew, social media is some kind of a new frontier for tourism.
It really is. And, you know, to use the ice caves as a perfect example of how social media and digital technology changed the way that we communicate these things. You know, it wouldn't look good if the first time in 7 years that the caves were open, the tourism guy wouldn't make it up there. So the only calendar weekend I had, I could make it, I went up there, was 20 below, and I hiked out, and that was a brisk walk.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I noticed was fantastic when you're out there is if you've ever been to the rim of the Grand Canyon and everyone's speaking Russian, German, Italian, that was the experience that I had while I was out on the ice. I mean, listening to people from all over the world that had come to whiskey, you kind of had to step back and pinch yourself. I actually did an interview on a German radio station in the parking lot in Cornucopia.
That's great.
And it was very surreal. But, you know, one of the things that I noticed is these folks were telling me about, you know, they saw it online. They saw it on Facebook. They saw these pictures. And when they came here, you know, it was just unbelievable, and then they met the people here, and that was what they wanted to really talk about was us as Wisconsinites, what it was like to meet people from Wisconsin. So it was really cool.
Yeah, it was just like a perfect storm of circumstances. Let's go to the phones right now. A reminder to the listeners, we can take your calls and questions. 800-228-5615 is the number. You can also post on our Westside Facebook page if you're a little shy for the to go on air. But right now we're going to go to William. William, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Rich, and hi to Drew, Linda, and James. We all know each other from kind of the tourism thing.
William, good to hear from
you. Council chair over here. But the one thing I wanted to mention, something we've seen a real uptick in the last couple of years, is people that chase railroad history. And over on the west side of Wisconsin, we certainly have a real rich history in with the Soo Line Railroads and those sorts of things that went through there in the years and basically built the west side of Wisconsin. And in Frederick, of course, we have our 1901 Soo Line Depot that's restored to a museum. And down in Osceola and Spooner, there are railroad rides available. And coming up this fall, the Soo Line Historical Society is going to be hosting their annual convention in September in Hudson and traveling out from that to kind of look at some of the railroad stuff. I know Drew has railroad things that resonate with him, and we've talked railroads before, but that's kind of one of the underlying attractions of western Wisconsin that we've seen an uptick, at least in the Frederick Museum we opened a couple weeks ago, Memorial Day weekend. We had visitors from six states and the country of France the opening weekend. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Very cool.
Sounds like I solicited a cheap, shameless plug here for railroading.
Hey, we'll take
I am a railroad aficionado when it comes to history. I love it in the state. And it is, you know, it's a wonderful story to tell. And William, thanks for bringing it up. You know, when you look at really what helped develop many of the small towns in northern Wisconsin, there is an amazing story to tell. I mean, there are towns that exist because the railroad created them. Mm-hmm. You know, just north of us up in Spooner is a perfect example. So it is great to tell those stories and to be able to develop that history.
James,
yeah, the town of Cable actually exists because the railroad company ran out of money at that point, so it was the end of the railroad for several years.
It was the terminus.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's how my town actually came into existence. Mm-hmm. The other cool thing about railroads is, you know, they were moving a variety of freight around, and so, you know, you get up in the north and you're looking at where they were hauling logs, mm-hmm. you know, south and stuff, but you can go all around the state where they were hauling different product, different places, and it's just the historical nature of the rail line that harkens back to those days that I think people are really fascinated with.
Yeah, and I think I grew up in Superior, which was a big, you know, rail yard, basically.
Absolutely.
And once there was this steam locomotive going through, and we were like literally chasing it on our bikes down the street to watch it because it was like this thing we'd never seen. And then for so many people, it just is like it's like an old friend, you know. Well, William, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to go to Martha in Eau Claire. Or I'm not sure where Martha is. Martha, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, your commenter really got it right when she mentioned music festivals. I was just at the Blue Ox Music Festival here in Eau Claire this past weekend, and it rained for 3 days. And people stayed in hotels. People came from every state in the country. They had people from all 50 states. It rained all day, so people were asking, where can I go buy mud boots? We sent them into Eau Claire. They went to Menards. They went to Walmart to get batteries for their campers when the awnings wouldn't close. I mean, it was just, you know, it was huge. It was huge. There must have been about 8,000 people there.
Awesome.
And to draw from every state in the country is just phenomenal. So, you know, the promoters of that event really got it right. It was a huge, huge success despite the rain. And people that come to bluegrass music festivals, they are a tough crowd, you know. So they'll come, you know, flood, snow, they will come. So, the bluegrass music and roots music festivals are a huge, huge draw. And I think we just can't do enough of that. It was a great success, so...
All right.
Good thing.
Thanks
yep.
so much for your call, Martha. Linda, John, the Blue Ox was inaugural kind of event.
Right, it was the inaugural. I was out there on Friday afternoon, and she's right. It's a hearty group that was out there. It had rained persistently on Thursday, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of soft dirt, we'll say.
Oh, my gosh.
But you can't even call it mud. The festival organizers did a great job of preparing the grounds with hay, I believe it was. People were having fun. A lot of people were just out barefoot going through the mud, having fun. And it just – it really evoked that, you know, Wisconsin spirit of people not letting something silly like weather get in their way of having a great time. And the music was phenomenal.
I know Yonder Mountain String Band, that's a nationwide act. There's also Pertnier Sandstone, which is – super popular in the Midwest. Yes. I think they're national, too, at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, they went after the national type of acts. And Jim Bischel is the organizer and owner of that and has said that this will continue into the future. And I do see it growing as well. There was, I think, room for growth. I know the camping was pretty maxed out, but still room for people as far as, you know, day spectators and lots of hotels. So
yeah, and it's interesting. You know, we've... The Chippewa Valley and surrounding areas definitely have music festivals. I mean, you've got the Rock Fest, Country Fest in Cadott, Country Jam in Eau Claire. I know I'm forgetting some, but now this was this one of the first bluegrass festivals?
Yes, yes. It's the first of its kind in our area, and it was its inaugural year. So I think one of the really interesting things about the music scene in Eau Claire is its growing diversity of genres that are presented.
Why is that important?
Yeah, I think it appeals to a wide, diverse age group and demographic. And so everybody can get in on the music action. I think it also cross-pollinates a bit where introduces different age groups to different genres of music for appreciating the type of music that maybe they're not familiar with. So
yeah, I couldn't help but think, I don't know why, but Young Money. You know, like Young Money, Old Money.
Those millennials are really doing well as young professionals.
Drew Nussbaum?
In the Tuesday Night Blues. You know, that's one of my favorite. I'm a bluesy, jazzy kind of guy. Right. And I'll tell you, you talk about a cool night. You go out there and you hang out at the park. And when you talk about pulling in a different demographic, I mean, there's everything there from young kids to, you know, retirees. I mean, it's everybody. Mm-hmm. And dancing. And not only just pulling in from Eau Claire in the Chippewa Valley. I mean, there's folks there from, you know, all over. A lot of folks from La Crosse that come up. There was a gentleman there last time that I was there, you know, came down from Superior for the night. So, I mean, it really does pull in a lot of people.
We're talking about tourism in western and west central and northwestern Wisconsin and how big of a deal it is. It's a huge impact economically for the region. We're talking with Linda John of Visit Eau Claire, Drew Nussbaum, he's with the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and James Bolin is the Executive Director of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. We'll take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the different types of tourism that we're seeing. Of course, music tour, festival tourism, sports tourism, national sporting events in and around our region, and much, much more. This is the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. You can dial in at 800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. We'd love to hear what you plan to do or have done for your little vacation in Wisconsin.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Farmers Union, hosting Soil Sisters, a culinary and agriculture adventure on more than a dozen women-owned family farms in south-central Wisconsin, August 1st and 2nd. SoilSistersWI.org. Catch the latest news headlines, listen to our live streams, and browse the archives of your favorite shows, all from your tablet or smartphone. The best of WPR and NPR whenever and wherever you want it. WPR.org.
I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this morning. We're talking about tourism and its impact on the region. I'm joined by James Bolin of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce, Drew Nussbaum of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and Linda John of Visit Eau Claire. The number to call in, 800-228-5615. What do you think of when you hear the word tourism? Where do you go? Do you have a cabin? Do you stay closer to home? Or are you participating in ag tourism? We'd love to hear it. 800-228-5615. So, Linda, John, speaking of music festivals, as far as the Blue Ox, is it too early to have any kind of figures for impact? And what kind of things would you look at anyway?
Well, we can do some initial estimates as far as the total number of attendees and the distance that they came from, and then break that down according to the spending formulas. But really, the truth will come out when we see room tax collections and also the state tourism report that comes out in 2016 okay. for this. So, and we'll be able to break that down a little closer.
As far as new music and different types of music in them, a mishmash of music genres. I mean, you can't get more eclectic than what's planned for the Eau Claires. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but basically Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, Grammy Award winner from Fall Creek, Wisconsin, is putting together a heck of a music festival right in his backyard. It'll be at the Country Jam grounds, correct?
Yep.
And, I mean, I don't have time to go through all the artists, but how excited is the city for that?
I mean, again, so fortunate to have another new music festival, and this one is going to be huge. We are already, I would say, 98% sold out on hotels. It does happen to be the same weekend as Rockfest in Cadott, so that is impacting it.
Yeah.
But we've been fortunate to have a great partnership with the university in making dorm room housing available. And for this audience, that works really well. It's a younger crowd. And they're coming from all over the world. We're doing the reservations at Visit Eau Claire. And I can tell you, this is a worldwide audience because they're familiar with Bon Iver and tours. Yeah.
And there's a band from Japan that's coming.
Yeah, right.
It's some kind
the lineup is incredible.
Yeah. Glamping.
Yes. that's the word for the dorm space.
That's a thing now. And what is that again?
Glamour camping. Uh-huh. It's just a step up from the tent in the campground, and it's basically a room and a bed.
Yeah.
Dorm room style.
With running water, too.
Yeah, and running water, yes.
And Wi-Fi.
And Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Absolutely. And transportation.
Interesting.
Well, there will be a shuttle program, so, I mean, it's a great deal, and people are loving that.
And it'll be fascinating to see because there's so much buzz, and the way they've been advertising it has been very interesting. Frustrating from a local news guy perspective because they didn't do interviews at first. But anyway.
A lot of social media
and
speaking directly with their fan base.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk sports tourism. Now, up in the Hayward area, this is one of the first big events that I remember going to. The National Lumberjack, World Champions, I should say, not the National, July 23rd, 24th, 25th. This thing is an institution up in your neck of the woods, James Bolin.
You know, it could even get you elected to Congress if you play your cards right.
If you could spin that log.
That's right. No, and again, that's an example of something that draws from all over the world. The competitors are from all over the world, and you know, it's just crazy when you get near – you know, that time of the year, it's just insane to see all the people around. And as you said, the campgrounds are full. The hotels are all full.
Main streets are just choked with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spending money. That's what we like.
That's right. And also the Hayward, the Muskie Fest is a big deal, I know, and everything musky. If you get a chance, folks, head up to Hayward and get your picture taken in the giant musky mouth.
You know, it's really one of those iconic photos that you see everywhere. You know, I even saw a Powerball commercial a couple of years ago where the ball rolled past the musky. You know, everyone recognizes that fish as a major draw, and so they want to get their picture taken either in the mouth of it or with it right behind them.
Any other examples of sports tourism? Of course, I know of one winter event that draws people to your region from around the world, but others?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of examples. Our area, you know, has a lot of trails and, you know, it's mostly held in public trust. And so obviously the American Birkebeiner is a big event that draws, you know, about 20,000 competitors from all over the world. And that has been growing and getting stronger all the time. But we hold an awful lot of other, you know, there's regional events and national events. And then we've been fortunate the last couple of years to host some international events. We held a Paralympic World Championships this past winter. And so we brought, you know, teams from 20 countries here, an incredible, you know, 2-week period, you know, up in the Cable area that was just insane. And then we just, about a week and a half ago, received notice that we were the successful bidder for the 2016 Junior Nationals. So that'll be, people are familiar with Junior Olympics. Mm-hmm. Used to be called the Junior Olympics. So we'll be bringing about 2,000 people up to the area for about 10 days. And that's where the U.S. will pick its Junior Olympic Nordic team.
There's a couple of things I want to follow up on with that. You have to bid to try to get these. So you're competing. I mean, and all the people in the studio here are nodding their head knowingly. What kind of things do you have to offer to entice an event to come? Are we? Is it like when someone wants to build a factory? Is it tax credits or something like that? Or no?
No, a lot of times it's just a matter of making sure that the rights holders are confident that their event is going to meet the standard that they want, that you can provide, all of the things that that they're looking for, that they need, to meet their event. And so it's one of the things that we're doing all of the time, is trying to connect the dots and say, hey, if you come to, the Eau Claire area, Linda John says, I'll make sure my team does this and we'll help you make this connection and coordinate this. And so You're doing a lot of that. I know for Junior Nationals, one of the things that we did to kind of make ourselves stand out is we actually looked at, this is able-bodied athletes.
Yeah.
But the last couple of years, we've hosted several adaptive sport events. And so we actually talked to the USSA, the Ski Association, and said, you don't really have an adaptive program. And if we have the event in Cable, we'll actually offer an adaptive class. And so it actually allowed the organization to have adaptive sport events all year long this next year, and then invite those adaptive athletes for the first time in history to compete alongside able-bodied people at Junior Nationals. And so it was a little bit of a twist. It was something new that made our area really stand out, something tangible that we were offering to the organization, that they could really capitalize on. And I think that swung things significantly in our favor. But it certainly didn't hurt that, we hosted a Paralympic World Championships last year. So we have, people that have been trained at the highest level of sport that we can bring in to help run this event.
Drew Nussbaum?
I just want to put a shout out to James and everyone from the Cable area, especially James. He's always very modest, and he was really the person behind the Paralympics coming up there and putting it all together. But I had the opportunity to be up there on several different occasions this past winter and talk with folks who were competing from all over the world here. And the one thing that, that resonated with all of them is when they come here, not only are they treated outstanding, but they're treated like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And that was what, they were so proud of, that, when they come here, people don't see the wheelchairs or the adaptive, apparatus. They just see a person. Mm-hmm. And they were so honored by that. But they just loved it. I mean, James had the World Cup a couple of years ago, and it was because of the success of the World Cup and because of the way that Northern Wisconsin handled that event and made everyone welcome that it was a unanimous decision they wanted to come here for the World Championship. So that, we sometimes in tourism we spend a little too much time talking about, the specifics, the lodging and the dining and the things that go into that, which are obviously very important. But if it wasn't for the people here that have the passion and the desire and put in the hours and the work ethic, these things wouldn't happen here.
And with regard to the, with the Berkey and these events, where are they held? Because I know that the Telemark situation up there was kind of a blow to have that resort closed down, and then it was purchased, the property. Where does that stand?
Well, it's owned by a private individual right now.
Brothers
own it. Yeah, family own it. But they've been really workable with us. So one of the things that's critical for us is, unlike a large event center where the event is held indoors, we're actually holding a lot of these races and stuff on trails outdoors. Mm-hmm. And so access to property and trails is critical. And so the owners have been great working with us, we have the Shawamigan Fat Tire Festival in September, and really they cannot run that event unless they can access the land that is part of the Telemark property, the American Birkebeiner. They've been working with them. The Berkey just concluded a giant fundraising process, and so they're actually building a permanent start area on a portion of what used to be the Telemark property. They're actually going to either be leasing it or buying it. There's some things going on there. So we're not exactly sure, what the status is. The family that has bought it has indicated a desire to sell it. There are some individuals, companies that have expressed an interest in buying it, but that's all kind of playing out. So, you know, we're still optimistic. That's that would be a huge boost to our numbers, obviously, if we could get those hotel rooms back again.
Yeah.
And then, it, you know, that would obviously allow a lot more people to stay in our area and spend their money in our area and see those numbers go up significantly. So we're optimistic about it.
Yeah, that whole thing was just this, an ongoing saga for years and years. And so people, I don't mean to spend too much time on it, but some folks are looking at it as redeveloping it back into a resort situation.
Yeah, there's a couple of different groups that the family has indicated that they're in communications with. I think that when they bought the property, they saw it as a thousand acre land purchase, you know,
yeah,
that
like
they could buy
for
hunting land or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think after they bought it, they came to understand how important the trails that exist on that property are to the local community and the economy. And so they realize that they're not the ones to reinvest and open it back up. But they do believe that that needs to happen. So they're working diligently to try to find someone willing to do that.
Interesting. I'll have to pass that up to my colleague in Superior. So as far as sports tourism in the Eau Claire region, I know that in July there's some events coming up. The National Coob
right.
Championship,
right.
Isn't it? Linda John?
Well, Eau Claire is the Coob capital of North America, which is pretty unique. We have a hometown hero. A lot of this, you know, comes from the local passion. A lot of tourism is developed because of local passion. And Eric Anderson, who enjoys this sport, experienced it when he was living overseas, brought it back here, started this very small, probably 10 years ago, in a neighborhood park, and it now has become this, you know, national draw. It's pretty huge, and City Council took action to actually designate Eau Claire as the North American Coob capital.
The City Council did.
The City Council has designated that, and the Coob event that takes place here in July is the second largest in the world. Second only to the World Coob Championship. So,
what is Coob?
First
of
all,
it's a very tough game to play.
Is it tough, really?
If you looked at it phonetically, it would look like cub.
Right.
It's K-U-B-B, but it is pronounced Coob. And it is a Swedish long game. To me, it feels it has a series of, and Eric will probably be mad at me for slaughtering this description. Maybe you can call him, but it's a series of wooden pieces that are tossed, and it feels kind of like it's a long game. It feels sort of like a combination of like bocce ball and chess to me.
Oh.
If that makes any sense,
it makes some sense, I guess. I've never partook, so I'll have to check it out. But it looks like you're throwing chunks of wood at other chunks of wood.
That is what you're doing.
Oh, okay.
But you don't want to get the main piece until the last. So
sure.
That's where the
because there's
chess,
a king.
Yeah,
there's
the
interest.
King. Yeah. And I will say that every Thursday night during the summer, it sounds like summer concert series.
Mm-hmm.
The Visit Eau Claire Fun Patrol is out teaching people how to play Coob. So if you want to experience it, that's a good way to do it.
Excellent.
Phoenix Park.
Back to the phones. We're going to hear from Wanda next. Wanda, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I want to put a plug in for all the things in St. Croix Falls.
Oh, please do.
Which is right on the very border of the western part of the state. We have quite a few things going on around here that are bringing tourists in all year round. I'm totally involved with the Ice Age Trail, which is the western terminus is right here in Interstate Park. And that trail, I know in the study they did this last year, generated $3 million worth of added revenue throughout the state. Of course, it goes across the state for 1,100 miles on its venture. And many people don't know that it is one of the 11 national scenic trails. It's right up there with the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail. There's only 11 in the country. So that's one thing. Another big, we have lots of cycling, bicycles. Cyclova is the name of a local store that does all kinds of events, big tire events in the winter, these Sasquatch dashes in the summer. We're looking for Sasquatch up here. I don't know if you've heard about the mud races at Trollhagen and Memorial Day. They have thousands of people come here with their four-wheel drive things that go through wheel-high mud that bring people into town.
Excellent. Drew Nussbaum.
The timing is everything. Actually, tomorrow I'll be up in the St. Croix Falls, Osceola area. I'm going to be working with some folks up there on doing some tourism assessment work and kind of studying and working on how to promote things a little bit more effort. But you've got a wonderful things up there, from Dragonfly Winery to the Adventure Park at Trollhagen. Now that's very cool. Of course, train ride in Osceola. Sure. I mean, that is an awesome area of the state and beauty. And if folks haven't been up there in a while. One of the things I really admire in that area is the fact that, obviously we have the best interstate park. There's a Wisconsin interstate park and there's a Minnesota interstate. Ours is better.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to say that.
There are things that are better. Now, they do have the biggest potholes.
There you go.
Jeez.
Well, you got to slow down.
You got to go across the river to see the pothole.
But the other thing I think is really neat there is with St. Croix Falls, how closely they work with Taylor Falls right across the river. So you've got, two towns working in two states, to promote business and tourism. It just shows you that, boundaries really don't matter many times when we're promoting what we do.
Last weekend was the Wanigan Day. And I don't know, do you know what a Wanigan Day is? What a Wanigan is?
I do not.
A Wanigan was the old floating meal shack when they were herding the logs down the rivers, and so that's what our celebration is about. This old Wanigan shack that fed the guys that were riding the logs down the river.
Very cool.
So anyway, we just had our and that's with St. Croix and Taylor's Falls. We have this huge parade that goes down the main streets of both towns. About an hour parade on Saturday night, and we have a big tent, and we have music all weekend and talent shows. But that's gone for this year, but next year it'll be the second weekend in June again.
Well, Wanda, thank you so much for the call. We really appreciate it, and sharing the gospel of tourism from Western Wisconsin. Thanks so much. 800-228-5615. She mentioned the Ice Age Trail. Bicycle tourism is a... It seems like it, at least online, it seems like it's a big thing. And I know that there's a big ride that happens, starts in Cable, goes into like the Superior area, and then goes back. I actually reported on it when I was a student at UW-Superior. But James Bolin, bike tourism.
It's huge. And for our area, it's absolutely huge. We've seen a significant growth in recognition nationally as a mountain bike area. We've received an EPIC designation from the International Mountain Bike Association for the trail system that we have. CAMBA is the organization that builds those trails, maintains those trails. But you come up into the Cable area on any weekend, and every other car is going to have a bike on the end of it. The nice thing about bicycling especially is that a lot of events can happen in the shoulder seasons. And so, May in the Cable area, there's a major biking event every single weekend.
Hmm.
And then you get into the fall and you've got the Shawamigan Fat Tire Festival. You've got the Grandview Firehouse 50, which is a road bike race. You've got the largest fat bike race. So now they've created these fat tires for bicycles that can go in the snow. And the largest fat bike race in the world takes place in Cable in March. So it's called the Fat Bike Berkey. They actually race on the Berkey Trail, which has been groomed all year. So it's an incredible course, and there's riders from all over. And so biking has now become a four-season sport, and the draw is huge. And Wisconsin has, not just in the Cable area, but, all over. There's all kinds of, trails, trail systems, parks, and so it's a huge draw.
And, these people do not mess around when it comes to biking. I remember the people that I talked with, there was different sections, like 30, 40, 50 miles in a day, and very impressive. And then there's the century riders that go up to 100 miles a day. Interesting folks. Linda.
I'll just add that biking is huge in the Eau Claire area also.
Absolutely.
And Lowe's Creek County Park has gotten national recognition for biking as well. And again, all year round, four-season sport, and sort of compatible with cross-country skiing and snowshoeing also. And to that end, Eau Claire did host the National Snowshoe Championships in March this year. So again, it just great exposure when we can bring those kinds of events to our area and show off the facilities and the amenities that we have.
We're talking tourism on the West Side right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by Linda John. She's the executive director of Visit Eau Claire. Drew Nussbaum is with us as well. He's the Wisconsin Department of Tourism Regional Tourism Specialist, and James Bolin is here. He is the Executive Director of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. He's also on the Governor's Council on Tourism. If you would like to join the conversation, 800-228-5615. We are talking about tourism. We'd love to find out what you like to do for your time off in our great state. 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from Hooper Corporation, supplying custom construction services, including electric power, mechanical, and green technology to commercial, industrial, and utility customers nationwide. Hooper Corporation, a Wisconsin company since 1913.
Energy therapy for the lower extremities is being offered June 18th or 19th in Eau Claire and Exploring Global Stories locally June 27th in Fall Creek as UW Eau Claire Continuing Ed and UW Extension connect people with possibilities. Details at the Continuing Education website.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about tourism in western Wisconsin, northwestern Wisconsin, west central Wisconsin, heck, the whole state. I'm joined by Drew Nussbaum of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, Linda John of Visit Eau Claire, and James Bolin of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to call in and give up a question or a comment or just to let us know where you like to go for your vacation here in Wisconsin. I want to bring this up. So tourism advertising, I mean, that's obviously a big part of getting people interested in coming to our region. But the Department of Tourism came out with a pretty interesting TV ads last year. They were directed by and written by Jerry and David Zucker. Those are some of the people that wrote and directed the comedy disaster movie Airplane. And they featured actors, the commercials featured actor Ted Stryker and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. This was a fun kind of an advertisement and kind of different, kind of out there. And it got a lot of attention. So I've got the audio version of it. I want to play it right now. Hopefully it works.
Stryker, you're too low.
I know, but Wisconsin is so beautiful in the summer. So much to do.
Over.
Roger.
What?
Boating, fishing, biking.
Huh?
I wish I was down there.
Roger!
My name is Kareem.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. Don't call me Shirley.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit flying.
I can't believe I ever left this place.
Wow. Welcome home.
Well, obviously, there's a lot going on in the video portion of that, too, but kind of a throwback to the movie Airplane, and it got some attention, a lot of attention, including this from Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton. He was talking to some tourism thing in Minnesota. He said, and I quote, "It is one of the most idiotic ads I've ever seen in my life," end quote. Boo hiss. Drew Nussbaum, how did that impact the reception of these commercials?
Ironically, the only thing I have to say to Governor Dayton is thank you. As soon as that comment was made with a lot of media from Minnesota in the room, obviously it went viral rather quickly. Mm-hmm. With the discussion that was going on and quite frankly a lot of support from not only, you know, our state but from Minnesotans as well who were saying, you know, hey, well, we like your ads and, you know, there's a lot of great comments on it. I would say from what I saw was about 60%, 70% were saying, well, we like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It generated about $1 million of earned media for us. So people that were I mean, we're sitting here today talking about a commercial because someone made a comment that they didn't like it.
From a year ago.
You know, my background not only is, you know, lodging and hospitality, but I was a marketing guy for years. And, you know, if you come up with a campaign that gets people talking about it, whether it's always great or there's some controversy involved, people talk about it. They remember these things. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, Governor Dayton was entitled to his opinion on that. Personally, it sounded like Governor Dayton needed a vacation. I think he needs to get away. He should check out travelwisconsin.com and come see us if he, you know, is really that stressed out.
Yes. Spoken like a true salesman, I guess. James Bolin?
Well, yeah, the Department of Tourism actually sent the governor a basket, a thank you basket.
Oh,
because
really?
That comment alone, as Drew said, generated $1 million in earned media for the state, and everybody was looking at it. One of the things that the department has been doing, and they don't toot their own horn very much, but they recently won their 64th International Marketing Award, national or international marketing award, competing against like Disney and
really?
You know, Visit New York and all of these big brand companies. And prior to this group and Stephanie taking the lead of the department, I believe the state had won 11 awards.
Wow.
And over the course of the last 5 years, they now have 64.
Wow.
And so part of what you're seeing is that they have focused in on what makes Wisconsin unique. You've heard us talking about the unique events and the incredible people and the stuff. And that's what people, when they're going on vacation, are looking for. And so, you know, if your ad looks like everybody else's ad, you don't stand out. And one of the things that I think we've done a really good job, the CVBs around the state, the department themselves, is just making us a little bit different, a little bit quirky, you know, a lot of fun, and everybody wants to come and check that out.
Drew Nussbaum, how big of a deal or how big of an impact do these kind of advertisements have? Not just, you know, the airplane spoof, but just in general, you know, when I see a commercial that says, come to North Dakota or come to wherever, I think that can't really make that big of an impact.
First off, I think it really kind of, you know, talks to our nature. You know, we are known to be, you know, fun people. We're a little quirky.
Mm-hmm.
I think those ads answer that. There's a little humor to it. You know, mm-hmm. that's who we are in Wisconsin. You know, to put it into dollars and cents, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you can say, okay, does it work? Does it not work? The average state gets, when we talk about earned media, you know, here, this, we're sitting here today talking about this, is in a sense, is the earned media. We're talking about this commercial.
Okay.
Average state gets, you know, $13, $14 million a year in earned media value, talking about their marketing. Last year, we achieved $114 million in earned media.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's being noticed. People are commenting about it. So we're seeing stuff, you know, seeing comments that are coming from across the country. You know, it's great to see the buzz. And when folks come here, you know, if we were getting the, well, it's not a fun state, it's not the quirky place we saw in the commercial, then there'd be a concern. But the great part is it's not. We're getting just that opposite where they're coming and saying, we're seeing exactly what we thought we'd see.
Hmm. Linda John.
Well, and just to piggyback on what Drew said, while the earned media has great value and there's a huge focus on that, specifically the dollars that are outlaid for commercials and that type of thing, there has been research done to determine the return on investment on that. And it's been stated and researched that for every dollar invested by the State Department of Tourism, there's a $6 return back to the state's general fund. So it's significant.
Great. A couple of things. The state budget is working its way through the legislature right now, kind of stalled. But there are a couple of things that kind of relate to tourism, either indirectly or directly. One of the things, in his two-year budget proposal, Governor Scott Walker has cut funding going to maintain state parks. Instead, he's proposed having the parks be self-sufficient through increasing fees. So camping fees would go up between $15 and $20. I think it's still in play a little bit, a month for Wisconsin residents, and $19 to $25 a month for non-residents. Drew Nussbaum, I'm going to ask you, since you work for the governor. Do you think that's going to impact tourism at all?
You know, folks will pay for the experience they want to have.
Yeah.
Now, granted, is there a tipping point? I mean, is there, you know, everything has a price point. The economy and the market will decide what that value limit is. From what I see right now, I mean, we have the reputation of having great parks and great amenities. You know, right now, I think we're on the right track with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't profess to be an economist when it comes to where is that tipping point in there. You know, once again, if you're going to, you know, look at a fee structure in there, you've got to make sure that you've got your house in order as far as what you're providing to the guests. The good part about that equation is, you know, if we're the tourism side, we're the fun, the marketing side, we're the people. And from what I see on our side of the table, you know, we're ready. We're ready for whatever has to be put into place to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing, and I want to ask James Bolin about this. The Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association has been pushing for years to get a change in the room tax law. And first, I want to talk a little bit about what the heck it is. But this, I don't know exactly when it was, but this budget session, they worked with members of the Joint Financing Committee to insert some language that changed the state's room tax law. Basically, the changes would reduce the amount of hotel room tax dollars going to local governments to pay for things like municipal services. Instead, the money would go to promotion and advertising for tourism and the lodging industry. What are your thoughts on that, James Boland?
Well, you know, again, we're tourism, and so, you know, definitely not the legislative side. But, you know, the big thing is to understand that, you know, the marketing dollars are, especially when it comes to room taxes, for a benefit already received. So you get those dollars when someone stays in a room. Mm-hmm. But then to recapture that money and reinvest it to bring more people is what gives strength and longevity to our marketing plan. Mm-hmm. And so obviously it's really important that we have good municipal you know, infrastructures and stuff. But we also need to make sure that we have the funding to be able to do the marketing that we're all talking about. And so, you know, I think that it's always contentious. I think budgets are really tight for everybody, including municipalities. But it's great to see, you know, that that money's going to be spent in marketing to bring more people so we can continue to have discussions like we're having today.
Sure. And if I can try to boil that down, I mean, even if less money is going directly to the municipal services, if more people come in, that means more money for the
municipal. Yeah, they can make it up in sales tax and other. There's ways that they can capture more money as well.
Linda John.
Just a little bit more historical perspective on that issue. There currently is, as part of the statute, an 8% cap for the room tax.
Right.
And then also a provision that 70% of that must go to the local Convention Bureau Chamber destination marketing organization. The issue is that in 1994, the last reform, there were some municipalities that were at a different percentage. And so
way
this,
higher, basically.
Well, yeah, where,
that they,
where
were they were getting more
the
than
the municipality
they
was getting more than 30%.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is to bring those grandfathered communities up to that 70% is the whole idea behind it.
Gotcha. We've just got about a minute left in the program, and I'm going to go round robin here and just kind of take the pulse. James Boland, what are you excited about with tourism in your region?
You know, just the national recognition that we're getting, everybody's hearing and talking about Wisconsin. It seems like the highways are packed. Everybody's around. It seems like it's going to be a good year.
Drew Nussbaum.
You know, go back to the numbers. The numbers always tell you what's happening in a state. Last year, all 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin were up in tourism impact spending.
And Linda John.
Very bullish on the outlook for tourism in our area. One thing we didn't get to, but is really important, is tourism development. And that is part of these new festivals coming in. Got to mention the air show. But also hotel development and attraction development. And all of those things are really making our future bright here.
We could have gone another hour or more on this, I'm sure. Thank you all to, thanks to my guests. Linda John is the executive director for Visit Eau Claire. Drew Nussbaum is with the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. And James Boland is the executive director of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm trying to rush to the end of the program. He's also with the Governor's Council on Tourism. Also, a big thanks goes out to our new WPR Westside News intern, Simone Foster, for producing this program. Nice job. Along with Henry Lippold, of course. Also, thanks to Kat Jacoby for promotions and Debbie Brown for working the phones. Next week, we're going to talk about recycling programs. Have a good week.